Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's The Grapevine at SaverLife.com, and look for results, I think this week, from the San Francisco Chronicle wine competition, one that the Finger Lakes has done very well in the past, and pretty much every year has a wine in the sweepstakes round, kind of the finals for best white wine, a competition with about 3,000 white wines and 3,000 red wines. It's the largest wine competition in the United States. So it's being held a couple weeks later than usual this year, probably due to the pandemic. And again, those results should be out any time now. You can go to winejudging.com and read about some of the previous results I talked about a little bit last week. And Finger Lakes, specifically Dr. Frank and Cuca Spring Vineyards, have won a total of 4 best white wines in that competition in the last 10 years or so. So looking forward to seeing what happens this year. It's, again, a competition held in California. Judges probably from around the world, although maybe less so this year because of travel restrictions. I'm glad to see that they're apparently going to go ahead with the judging, which is not a public event. You know, these are panels of judges working for a couple of days to judge the wines, and those should be relatively easy to socially distance and keep those judges safe. So again, winejudging.com, follow the results there. This week, got our shipment of a wine CSA. This is a Finger Lakes project, and based out of Ithaca, where you get three bottles from a different winery each month. And this month is Sheldrake Point Vineyards, and the three wines were their Merlot, their Riesling Ice Wine, and a Riesling Table Wine. It's their, they call Acid Head Riesling, which I haven't tasted. I'm looking forward to trying it. I haven't tasted it at the winery. I haven't tasted it. This is the first time I've had a bottle of it, so looking forward to it. The tasting notes from this Acid Head Riesling, a refreshing nose of lemon zest and white flowers opens to bracing acidity on the palate. Whetstone and Granny Smith apple transition to a pink grapefruit finish. So if you like acidity, and acidity is generally a positive thing here, our cool climate tends to give us wines that are fairly high in acid compared to a warm climate. And that leads to some really nicely balanced wines, wines that are kind of cleanse your palate, wines that tend to age quite well compared to, say, a Riesling made in a warmer climate. And so this one, they are pushing the limits on the acid levels in the wine. And I can't wait to interview Dave Breeden, the winemaker and philosopher in chief. He has a degree in philosophy, I think, and find out what prompted this. Sometimes it's what's in the vineyard that prompts a decision, like this kind of experiment. They call it their beta series. Maybe this block in the vineyard had some especially high acid levels, and for whatever reason they had to harvest it. Sometimes you might leave the grapes out there longer and hope that the sugar levels rise and the acid levels fall as it ripens more. Or perhaps they wanted to try a higher acid Riesling to see what people thought. And It'd be especially fun to see what sommeliers think, what, you know, people who pair wine with food think of a wine that's maybe a little higher in acid. And I'm not familiar with normal acid levels, so that's why I need to interview Dave Breeden about it. The residual sugar is fairly high. I shouldn't say fairly high. It's higher than a dry Riesling, so it's a semi-dry Riesling, but with acid levels this high, your experience might be to think it's a dry Riesling. That often is the case, and that's one of the reasons that they launched the Riesling scale on the back of Riesling bottles, the dry to sweet scale, because residual sugar doesn't tell you the whole story. It's balanced by acid, and that's what decides how it tastes to you. So you look at this and it says residual sugar of 1.1. You think, well, I only like dry Rieslings. I'm not even going to taste this. But it's likely to taste more like a dry Riesling. So can't wait to check it out. And their website has, I would say, more information than most wineries provide about the making of the wine. They have the technical data, which includes the pH and the acid levels, so you can compare them with other wines. I just don't know really what those numbers mean. I mean, it's 10.3 grams per liter of acid and pH of 2.79. I guess I have to look up their regular Riesling and see how that compares, which I might do while I'm tasting this. Maybe open a bottle of one of their regular Rieslings and taste it side by side with this acid head Riesling. They also give the harvest date, the bottling date, number of cases produced, whether it's vegan friendly, which a lot of people would look at that and say, what on earth are they talking about? There's no animal products in wine. It's just grapes and you know, that's pretty much it. But actually, there are, or have been, very common fining agent. Fining is a process where you take out some of the solids to clarify a wine. And some of those, well, the common fining agents are egg whites, powdered form. They don't, you know, crack eggs and put the egg whites in the wine, but it's egg whites. And if you're vegan for whatever reason, you might be asking that question about wines, or may not realize that it's a question you should ask. Glenora has been one of the wineries at the forefront of promoting the fact that most, if not all, of their wines are vegan friendly, and really that means the fining agent. They're using, I think, betonite is at least one alternative, which is a mineral that works to clarify the wine. So again, they give a lot of information. Also, oak treatment. There was none for this. Malolactic fermentation, not used in this for this wine. Fermentation duration, 64 days, which is a lot. That's a long fermentation. Very long. Cold soak, not used. The yeast that they used to make the wine, Epernay 2. There are many different yeasts available, including wild yeast, which they've used for some of their ice wines. They harvested 5.15 tons of this Riesling from two of their blocks, R1 and R2. So, kind of interesting information. They also have these additional notes. Wine rested on lees for 7.5 months to aid mouthfeel and complexity. That means that it was sitting with the dead yeast for 7.5 months. And being that's an extra step. The 1% addition of Final Press Riesling Ice Wine Juice was added in November to aid in complexity and balance residual sugar. That's a fascinating addition. So this is Riesling ice wine that they are pressing probably in... well, this was added in November. This is 2018. Again, they're tweaking it. Small changes. This will be a fascinating discussion with Dave Breeden about this Acid Head Riesling. They give tasting notes. Don't think they have any food combination suggestions, but I kind of ignore those anyway, so don't really miss having that. Other things in their beta series, they have a Riesling Bubbles and a Muscat Otnel Bubbles. These are forced carbonation wines that are sparkling wines like Prosecco, but sometimes with a crown cap like a beer bottle. These are screw top bubbles, something, a category that's grown a lot in the Finger Lakes. They're also have a couple beta series in their dessert wine category. Sheldrick Point is, as I mentioned yesterday, they have won a lot of awards for their ice wines, international awards, some of the bigger awards that the Finger Lakes has received over the last decade or two have been the dessert wine awards that Sheldrick Point has won. And Dave Breeden has been their winemaker throughout. He's been there for many years. But they have a couple beta series. One is Late Harvest Cabernet Franc 2018. That'll have just a beautiful color. Casa Larga does a Cabernet Franc ice wine. Cabernet Franc grapes don't hang that well for making ice wine, so it's not commonly seen. Vidal is probably the easiest one to make ice wine with. The grapes just hold up really well. It's a French-American hybrid. And then Riesling is often made into ice wine like Sheldrick Point does. They're also doing a beta series Cabernet Franc Appassamento, which will be fascinating to taste. Appassamento style is where you dry the grapes for usually weeks. So you pick the grapes, you put them in the lugs that they normally harvest them in, you just put a single layer in. You don't pile those lugs high with grapes. Just a single layer in so they get air circulation, as you don't want them to rot. And then often use fans on them to help raisinize the grapes. So in this case, Sheldrick Point actually dried them on the vine, I haven't heard them doing this in Canada. Canada has several wineries that do a lot of a Appassamento style, and Ravines uses this technique for a percentage of their Chardonnay, although they don't promote it that way. A portion of the Chardonnay they dry in the lugs. Forgotten Sheldrick Point actually dries them on the vine for 2 months after the traditional harvest, which is kind of essentially a late harvest, although a much later harvest. It'll be fun to ask Dave about this. Fruit was whole cluster foot pressed. So these were, you know, probably stamped, but some very clean boots on when they did it. Wine rested in the barrels for 8 months. And they describe this as a cocktail of grenadine and orange liqueur garnished with an olive, provide aromatic depth on the nose. The nose is contrasted by a palate of everything dried figs, herbs, cranberries, and prunes. Sprite acid, tannins, and elevated alcohol carry the finish. And the alcohol in this is 15.9%. Cool idea. Again, probably a fabulous wine. Can't wait to try it. And they ship within New York State, so you can order it. They're on Cayuga Lake. And one of the relatively few wineries that's actually on one of the lakes. The lake access is very close to the winery. The late harvest Cabernet Franc says the grapes were dried on the vine 3.5 months after the traditional harvest. Fruit was whole cluster, foot pressed. So two different beta series dessert wines from Sheldrick Point from 2018. Late harvest Cabernet Franc and a Passamento Cabernet Franc. And some wineries might have combined those two. I would be tempted, not trying to improve on what Dave Breeden does, because he is one of the best winemakers around, but just to have a fun experiment, I might open a bottle of each of these. The higher alcohol level means they'll stay pretty well in the refrigerator. Don't have to drink them immediately. And taste them side by side. Maybe do a very small amount in a glass combined. And then, this is kind of what the winemakers do with when they're thinking about blending trials. They will measure exactly how much wine from each of the barrels or each of the varietals that they are blending, and then have several or maybe even a couple of dozen glasses with different combinations. Trying to find the sweet point, literally, of where it is the most interesting, most delicious combination of maybe it's different blocks of the same grape, maybe it's a blend like a Meritage blend, and that's a Bordeaux style blend with a U.S. copyrighted name, Meritage, which is generally Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Merlot. So they would take different percentages of each. One might be 50% Cabernet Franc and 25% of Cabernet Sauvignon, 25% of Merlot. And you can see there could be kind of an infinite number of blending options. And I would guess that some winemakers may go through several series of those, trying to narrow down what they want to do for the final wine. And it's a fascinating process. One which I think a lot of people, myself included, would taste most of these and just say it's delicious. I can't tell which is better. It's those fine points which go beyond just what's in the bottle and what you're tasting this moment, but also maybe what the potential to age this is, how these flavors might change in a year or two in the bottle, and all kinds of factors go into decision, including availability of what they have, how much of each of the varietals or blocks do they have to do these kinds of blends, and do they want to do it as like a beta series like Sheldrick Point, or are you trying to match the style that you've had in the past that people expect from a certain bottle of wine. It's actually very taxing work. I mean, I would guess after a blending trial for a few hours, your brain is and your palate are just kind of shot from concentrating so much on trying to figure out what the final decision is going to be, and then you blend them, and that decision is largely done. Maybe you can tweak it a little bit by adding a little bit more of something, but these are big decisions, and so a lot of those blending trials and things go on during the winter as they are starting to bottle wines. I saw Glenora is bottling their first of the 2020 wines coming up, I think, this week, Vignoles and Dry Riesling, I think. They start bottling, and really the goal is to have the tanks free, the barrels free for 2021 harvest. So can't save that until August. So the wine CSA, you spend about $90 a month. You get three bottles from each of the wineries or from the featured winery of that month. And Boundary Breaks was the first month that they did this. And then Dr. Constantine Frank was December. So Boundary Breaks was November. Dr. Frank, it was December. And Sheldrake Point, January, which is, I expect they probably chose them partly for this reason. Dr. Frank has some amazing sparkling wines, so great choice for December. And there was a sparkling wine as part of that trio. And January is often the month to celebrate ice wine. Certainly is in Canada. And Casa Larga usually has their ice wine festival in February. But again, it's the height of winter, ideal time to feature ice wine. And their Riesling ice wine was one of the three that was sent from Sheldrake Point. So you can still join the CSA. Not sure you can get the Sheldrake Point shipping, although it's possible. Perhaps I'm not sure how late they sign people up for that month, but you can certainly join for February. And they don't announce the wineries ahead of time, so I don't know what's going to be coming in February. But I like that. That's why not have three surprise wines show up on our door in February. WineCSA.org. You can get more details. Ithaca Wine Ventures is the organization behind this. And there'll be a virtual tasting with Sheldrake Point January 30th in a week. And that'll include Chuck Tauk, co-owner, and as the Wine CSA announcement says, Cornell Hotelli, graduate of the hotel school at Cornell, along with many other people here in our area. Steve Wayne from the former Holloway House was hotelli, and there were a bunch of others. I forget who else went to Cornell and stayed in the area. So Chuck will be part of that. And he's one of the co-owners, I think, since the very beginning, 1997, I think Sheldrake Point opened. And they're on the west side of Cayuga Lake, and fabulous wines. I didn't mention all their other wines. We talked a little bit about dessert wines. They also do a non-vintage ice apple wine, which may be partly a sign of some of the Canadian heritage. At least one of the co-owners, or one of the original founders, Bob Medill, I think, is originally from Canada. And when I sat in on the Finger Lakes International Wine Competition tastings and judgings, there were quite a few iced apple wines coming from Quebec. And this is not a category we've seen a lot of coming from the U.S. or from New York State. So this is a 2016 ice apple wine. And you should just try that. But they have a number of red wines they do, including Gamay Noir, which is unusual, one of the only ones in the Finger Lakes. Bet the Farm Winery has made Gamay and has planted Gamay now, but the Gamay that they've made in the past was from, I think, grapes from Sheldrake Point. Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, and then Reserve Meritage, and a Block 3 Pinot Noir, and a Reserve Cabernet. The white wines, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Muscat Otnel, and a bunch of Rieslings, and Gewürztraminer. So, cool things to taste at Sheldrake Point, and can't wait for the tasting rooms to really come back to normal, hopefully this summer. I'm sure the wineries are hoping that, have a chance to taste more of these wines. But again, many, if not most, of the wineries will do curbside pickup. They also ship within New York State. Some of them have shipping deals that they do periodically for either free shipping or flat rate shipping, $5, $10. Or if you know someone who's going to the Finger Lakes to visit a couple wineries, so you can call and pay for the wine and have your friends pick it up for you and bring it back. So drinking local wines makes a huge difference on our local economy. And you can find some delicious wines from elsewhere, but local wines are fantastic. Many different types, and again, it's a great way to support our local economy. And if you want to send wine to someone as a thank you, Finger Lakes Wineries and wineries like Arrowhead Spring Vineyards in Western New York, they ship to many states, if not most states, but not all wineries. So depends on the states. It's they have to file papers and pay in each state they want to ship to, and how much wine does a small winery in the Finger Lakes sell to Idaho, or Kentucky or New Mexico. So they might have some fans there that sort of build their base, and so maybe they do register, but that's why not all wineries ship to every possible state, because it's expensive and that's a lot of paperwork. So let me know if you have trouble finding a winery to ship to a specific state, and I'll see. I have a database that I keep of which wineries ship to which states, so I can search on a specific state pretty easily. Should figure out a way to put that up on my website so people could use it. But I need someone better at websites than me to do that. So maybe we'll find a way to that we can easily do that and put it up on my website. We'll be back next Saturday with Gardening Restaurants Discover the Finger Lakes. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's The Grapevine, SavorLife.com. Have a great day.